Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live a good life and to create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social conscious and unconscious dynamics and desires. Welcome to this edition of Edgy Ideas Podcast. Today we have a very special guest. His name is Dr. Vamik Volkan. Vamik is an Emeritus Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Virginia, Emeritus President of the International Dialogue Initiative. He holds professorships across the world and has many other honorary positions. Dr. Volkan was a member of the International Negotiation Network under the directorship of former President Jimmy Carter. His work on trauma and understanding large groups is internationally renowned, and he has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 5 times. Dr. Volkan is the author and co-author of psychoanalytic and psychopolitical books. His book, Large Group Psychology, Racism, Societal Divisions, Narcissistic Leaders, and Who We Are Now, received the Gradiva 2021 Best Book Award. Vamik, you're very welcome to Edgy Ideas. How are you doing?
Well, thank you for doing this dialogue with me. I really appreciate
it. It was very nice. You sent me a brief biography about your journey and how that informed your work. And I was very interested. You're a Turkish Cypriot. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm now 89 years old. And I was born in 1932 to Cypriot Turkish parents in Nicosia, Cyprus. And at the time, the island was a British colony. Mm-hmm. And as everybody knows, there are Cypriot Greeks, their majority, there are more numbers. Cypriot Turks, there are Armenians, and even Phoenicians. There are two religions, and people there call themselves as Phoenicians. So whenever I go to Cyprus, I like to go to these villages and go back in history. So I was exposed to different ethnic identities when I was born. And I was growing up, then I went to the medical school in Ankara, Turkey. I graduated in 1956, mm-hmm. and I started to work at the university hospital, but I was a British person. The Turkish government would not give me money. And I suddenly realized that my father has been sending me money every month. And at that time, there was something called brain drain.
Yes.
They did not have enough physicians in the United States. They were collecting young physicians. So I came to America at the beginning of 1957 as a newly graduated physician, and stuck here.
And in America, you studied to be a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst.
Yes. Well, yes, I came here and looking back, I wanted to know myself, I think, because of my personal history. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a replacement child. My mother's side on the island were, from Ottomans, high-level Ottomans. And when the British came, they lost everything.
Yeah.
And my mother's, I was given the name of my mother's grandfather, who was a last Ottoman religious judge, Kadı.
Okay.
Nicosia. And so I guess, many years later, I understood. Of course, I did not know it. Now I can psychoanalyze myself. Yeah. So that I was supposed to bring back my family's, especially my mother's side, to some kind of glory or something. So, so anyhow, I came here and they were giving the foreign doctors very little salary. And they said, if they give me $25 more every month, I had to work at a state hospital in North Carolina. So, of course, I accepted it. And state hospital turned out to be Terry Hospital. And imagine this, early 1960s, Terry Hospital was only for African Americans. So I go to this village, Goldsboro, North Carolina, and I become a physician, working physician at Terry Hospital. There are no white American doctors. All the doctors are, immigrants and like me. And I got to know something called racism.
Yes. Yeah.
Like at the time, Greeks and Turks were fighting on Cyprus, but I never felt that Greeks were less than human. I was jealous of that because of their famous Greek background or something like that. So racism, oh my God.
Yes.
And almost, we were reading books and papers saying that African Americans, they were, lower mind and so on. Oh my God. And I spent 2 years, my first job was like that, and confused in a sense. And then I came to Virginia and went to Washington, D.C., drove every day to get my psychoanalysis. I got my psychoanalytic training. And I began my first research was on mourning. I wrote books and so on. And only years later, I realized why. Because I had come to, after I came to America, a few months after I came to America, I got an envelope from my father from Cyprus and learned that my roommate, when I was attending medical school in Ankara, had gone to Cyprus because his mother was ill and he was killed by a Greek terrorist. He was shot 7 times. And here I was in America and my roommate was like a younger brother to me and I couldn't mourn. How can you mourn if you don't talk about it? I didn't know very much. And so I got into writing about mourning and so on and just doing clinical work. In 1979, then President, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, went to Jerusalem. And he declared that 70% of the problems between Arabs and Israelis is psychological. He spoke of a psychological wall between Arabs and Israelis, or Egyptians and Israelis. And because of this, yes, the government went to ask American Psychiatric Association to study Sadat's statement. Because Sadat was kind of popular at the time in American
politics.
And so they came to American Psychiatric Association, and there was a committee there. Committee of Psychiatry and Foreign Affairs. Mm-hmm. You know what it meant? Every 6 months, we would get together and have bourbon and talk and go, because we had no idea. And myself and a Greek American, we are the youngest members. And I guess we were the guinea pigs.
Yes, yes.
They were watching us, a Greek and a Turk getting together or something. Well, to make it short, after a while, I became the director of this committee. And my Greek friend, who's now one of my best friends, of course, became the vice director. And so Soviet Empire collapsed, and we were able to get funds. So at the University of Virginia, at that time I was the director of one of the university hospitals. It was an empty house, and I declared that this house belonged to me. And we called it Center for the Mind and Human Interaction. And we got grants, and we went to Soviet Union, and apparently Gorbachev was interested that Americans coming. At the time, no Americans going to Soviet Union to talk to Soviet psychologists. To make it short, for the next decade, I spent time with my team members, mm-hmm. multidisciplinary.
Yeah.
Members are not multidisciplinary. Psychoanalysts, psychologists, sociologists, linguists, political scientists, diplomats, historians.
Wow.
And we spent, for example, 7 years in the Baltic Republics, mm-hmm. Bringing together very high level Russians and very high level Baltic Republic people, so that they could have a divorce without killing each other. So
to speak. Yes, yeah.
And suddenly I learned something that I can say in one sentence. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are so many realistic reasons why people go to wars and all that junk. But at the end, everything is to maintain an abstract concept. Mm-hmm. It's called large group identity, which means we are Estonians, we are Jewish people living in Lithuania.
Yes.
We are Georgians, we are South Ossetians, we are Croats, we are Cypriot Turks. And so I began, the psychoanalysts and my team began noticing what happens when unofficially, when these people, high-level people get together. And at the time, because Soviet Union was collapsing, American people didn't give a hoot, but Russians were very interested in our work.
Yes.
And grants were available, like $1 million grant to go and so on. Meanwhile, also, Jimmy Carter heard that we were doing this, and he had an international meetings. He would bring people, prime ministers and Nobel Prize winners, people from Africa. And I liked Jimmy Carter. He was very religious, but he never, never would say things, religious things when we talk.
Who are you talking about, Ramek? I didn't catch the name.
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter, yeah, yeah.
Jimmy Carter. So yeah. I became a member of his committee, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one time I traveled with him and his wife and others to Africa to meet African leaders and so on. And suddenly, I began learning things about leaders, leader-follower relationship, what happens when opposing people get together, because in official diplomacy, you put your papers under your arm, lift them, and you go and sit, and blah, 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 you know. And when we brought people together, let's say, including a second person in Duma, the Russians, and let's say Estonians and Russians, one of the people who joined us later became the president of Estonia, Arnold Brüttel. And we would not do anything secretly. We would go and talk to the prime ministers and presidents that we are doing this, but we kept it from, we kept it away from media. So not, nobody knew.
Except I
wrote this thing. When you get media, then all kind of things come in. And so you, we brought these people together so that they could understand what was their troubles. And they would say, where do we start? And I'm a psychoanalyst. I would say, whatever comes to your mind, start from there.
Free associates.
So we develop a methodology, which is later called the tree model. And we applied that. And so for decades, my God, for decades, I was all over the world getting to know so many people. And then, for example, we also studied traumatized societies like after Kuwait was invaded, we went to Kuwait. After Anwar Hoxha died, we went to Albania and Romania. After Ceausescu died. So in psychoanalysis, Freud, starting with Freud, of course, you know, they wrote about mythology, history, and so on. But in clinical setting, it was like a talking cure. And only what happens in the room. External events were not touched up. For example, I went through my psychoanalysis during the time when they had all kind of ethnic conflict in Cyprus, but my analyst would never show attention. And only later I wondered if he was Jewish. Was he away from, you know, looking at things like that. So I developed a new career and I have no name for it. And later on, people call me that I'm kind of father of political psychology or something like that. And in fact, in many universities in America and in Europe, now they have political psychology divisions. And I'm invited to go and visit. So maybe I visit about 10 of them. None of them. None of them teach what we learn. None of them use our findings. Still, they are using it like an intellectual way, like a bargaining. So this is why I wrote many books giving details of what we did. And now I have a wonderful, wonderful gift. You know what my gift is?
Tell me your gift.
Almost every other week, or at least once or twice a month, I get an email from a young person, young man or young woman, who is writing his or her thesis. About some of the concept that we found, and they're interested in the psychology of international relations. And I answer all of them because I feel like, my God, this is wonderful that young people are, because technology, my God, I feel stupid, really stupid. I don't even know how to use my computer. And you push button like I'm talking to you and so on. Human nature does not change. Human nature changes very slowly, as you know what's happening right now. So it's diplomacy has not change much, but there were big changes because now, because of technology, a leader pushes the button and talks to the other leader about ambassadors and so on. Their roles change. So I'm now, in my recent writings, I'm saying that this in-depth psychological understanding of human relations, large group psychology, should be taught in psychoanalytical schools.
You've had such a rich history and experience. You've met some amazing people and done some incredible work. Can you just summarize for the audience just one or two of your key concepts, such as the chosen trauma and chosen glory, what that means, just as to enlighten the listeners?
Okay, I should, because I think we should also talk about what's happening today. So I'll give an example to explain what's chosen trauma.
Yeah.
We were bringing influential Estonians and influential Russians together. Like rectors and like best poets or second person in Duma, etc.
Yes.
And during the, we would meet every 4 months for 3 days. And during the first year, Estonian participants could not express any negative feelings. They would turn blue, literally. They could not verbalize it. And understanding of it was very simple. I mean, they lived under Soviet Union so long, and if they say something, Soviets would come and get them again.
Yeah.
Or Russian would come and get them. So one day, one of them, in fact, later he became president of Estonia, said something not bad, still nasty about Russians. Second man from Duma, his response was Tatar-Mongol invasion of Russia. No, not that thing. Centuries ago.
Centuries back, yeah.
The idea was that Tatars and Mongols came and conquered us. They even conquered Moscow. And without us, Russians, Europe would be ruined. And therefore, we have entitlement. We're not conquering you, Estonians. We're not conquering you, Georgians. We are keeping you under us so that you, one day, you will be appreciative that we are protecting you. We are not like Mongols and Tatars and so on. So, you get Turks and Greeks together. And after a while, suddenly Greeks start talking about 1453, the occupation of Istanbul, Constantinople.
Yes, yeah.
So we found out, we call these things chosen traumas. Chosen trauma is not every ancestor's bad experience become a chosen trauma. There are other reasons for it, like Battle of Kosovo, 600 years ago.
Yeah,
I understand there are 20,000 lines of poems or something. And Prince Lazar, who was the leader of Serbians, is paintings like Jesus Christ and the churches and so on. So certain trauma becomes changes its functioning. It's not trauma anymore. It becomes the most important symbol of that country. And
of that large group identity,
Identity. I come up with that. Imagine that thousands, millions of people living under a tent. Okay? Everybody, they have their own identity. You know, me, I'm Balkan, or I belong to this football team, or I belong to this professional organization. But the canvas of the tent is my large group identity.
Yeah.
And in our routine lives, we don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
We are interested in our families or lovers or football team or something yes. like this. But if I'm a Ukrainian right now, my large group identity, I'm going to hold on it more than I'm holding my identity right now.
Yes.
When there was fights in Cyprus, large group identity was more important than my personal identity.
Yes.
So these chosen traumas become part of very important identity markers.
Mm-hmm.
And
Can I ask you something?
Yeah, sure.
Do chosen traumas in your experience, do they become mobilized by different leaders for political reasons over time?
Not so. That's what I was going to say.
Okay, good.
For example, Trump
yes.
in America. You know that in my city, in Charlottesville, all these things happened.
Yes.
And a lady was killed. Oh, my God. It is all, I mean, who's Trump? What has to do with South, American South? Because now American South is all over. I mean, the African Americans are all over, white people all over. But they're inducing, like, the civil war
mm-hmm.
as if the biggest trauma for white supremacists.
Yes, yes.
And if you go to Turkey right now, I was a medical student in Turkey. In my class, they had more girls than boys in medical school. And nobody just was there after the revolution and the Turkish Republic was born. Everybody open. Nobody was thinking about covering themselves. And now if you go to Turkey, you see a fantastic, unbelievable division physically. Mm-hmm. If I go to Turkey, and I'm giving a lecture to 300 people. Let's say the 150 of them are ladies, and most yeah. of them sitting next to each other. One is like a European lady, open hair.
Yes.
She's sitting next to somebody.
Her headscarf, yeah.
So Turks do not have the power to go and re-establish Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm. But
leaders and political parties go back and they brought back the old customs.
Yes.
Other places, for example, many places are inducing this chosen traumas to make, and they come up as realistic and fantasized. Chosen glory.
Yeah.
Like American chosen glory that during Trump period was absolutely delusional.
Yes.
Like America only for white people, for God's sake, and not only white people from Middle East or Italy or something, but Northern white people.
Yes, yeah.
Those kind of things. So we need to somehow, these issues need to be understood by high-level politicians so that they can help them to negotiate better.
Yeah.
And there is interest, and they've asked me and my other colleagues to talk to them, but still we are not there. And now what is happening in Russia is that Before I heard that Ukraine was occupied, the first thing came to my mind in relation to Putin was Slobodan Milosevic.
Yes.
Why? Because when Slobodan Milosevic came to power and all these bad things happened, I was younger mm-hmm. and trans, and I went to Serbia. I found the German ambassador to Serbia during Milosevic. I met many people who actually knew Milosevic, mm-hmm. interviewed them, collected a lot of data about Milosevic's psychology. I did not see him. but I was able to collect tremendous amount of material. And to make a summary, you know, he had a father who killed himself. He goes into the house, he sees his mother hanging herself, mm-hmm. uncle kills himself. He had all these people, dead people in his life and so on, so that he knew how to relate to people. So that to dig out this Lazar body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And 1 year, they buried the 600-year-old bones, whatever was left. And the next day, Lazar was reincarnated. Next day, mm-hmm. they bring the body back to Kosovo, and they build a monument and so on. So his personal story, yes. and yeah. what he did with Serbian story were so much intertwined. And I wrote a great about this. Mm-hmm. When I heard Ukraine situation, Putin situation, same thing came to my mind. So I don't have any, but I never met anybody who knew Putin in person and so on, but I'm now writing to many friends in Russia and Republic of Georgia and collecting a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And my God, the similarity between Slobodan Milosevic and Putin is coming. I'm still collecting data, but you know that you know, he don't even know his mother is his real mother. They don't mm-hmm. even know he was raised by another mother. And two older kids were dead when he was born. He was a replacement child.
Okay.
And father died, this everybody dead. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning also that before Ukraine, there was a increased play in graves. Do you know that they had children's play that they would be buried? Mm-hmm. After Nazis came, they would be shot and they would be buried. They would be dead and write letters to their parents, and then they would come out of graveyard. Do you know that there are competition of grave diggings in Russia?
No, wow.
So they went back to kind of World War.
Yes.
And glorified, we are mm-hmm. they're dying and so on, and Nazis coming and so on. He was talking about Nazis.
Yes, yeah. But,
so personality of the leader mm-hmm. Gets involved in this kind of thing.
Sure. You wrote about something that interested me. You wrote about soul murder, a soul murder of a people. Like a leader can create that. And I wondered if you thought that applied to the Russian situation.
Well, soul murder, but giving a new kind of soul, different
yes.
soul.
Yes.
Replacing it. And so there's also division in Russia. I mean, there are mm-hmm. people who are... Division occurred everywhere.
Of course.
I cannot say that I know Putin's mind because he did not lie on my couch, but because of my knowing many leaders like that, mm-hmm. I'm almost sure.
Yes.
That he is having such whatever reasons, suddenly he is just got into this kind of. Thinking and believing, and the leader follower relationship, two-way street.
Yes.
And sometimes the leader more important, and sometimes what comes from the society is more important. And sometimes leaders who influence people, they are kind of also do good things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me give you an analogy. Okay. Imagine a plate, okay? And on the plate, there is a pumpkin pie. Or a pie.
Okay. A pie on a plate.
Okay. Take a little part of the pie and separate it from the main pie. Okay?
Yeah.
The main pie is the leader and his narcissistic mind, glorified, mm-hmm. big. Okay. Some leaders, they say, this part is not good. This is why I put it away from me, mm-hmm. not to touch my greatness.
Yeah.
But some leaders, they sugar, and they put more sugar on this little pie so that little pie followers, they get better so that they can be, you know, come together.
Yes.
And some leaders, they put more vinegar on it, make it bad. And if you are Hitler, you push it out from the...
Yes. Thing. Yes.
So this think about this analogy. Mm-hmm. And this is what is also, I think, is happening in Putin's mind at this point. And it's so sad. And what the world can do about this? I mean, that's the helplessness of it, that we need to study. And when I collected data, especially from my friends from Republic of Georgia, about this amazing increased interest with graveyards and the children's play.
Yes.
It made me a believer that what I'm thinking, I think, is correct. But knowing psychology does not mean that realities disappear. There are reality people dying. And I mean, that is the problem. My hope is that myself and my team, our findings will be absorbed more.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I'm so pleased to see young people interest in what we found, so that new kind of ways may develop, realistic ways to deal between large groups, maybe instead of just going and fighting and having very official diplomacy, you have other ways that they may come up with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's wonderful that young people are taking up your work. And I know through my circles and my audience, people are very, find your work so helpful. When I came across some of your ideas, it's been very, very helpful. So thank you very much for your contribution. We're coming to an end of the of our time, Vamik. I ask guests just one question. I don't know if you'd like to answer it. I asked them, from all their experience, what they think can help create a good life and a good society. Big questions.
Oh, luck. If you're lucky, you have a human leader.
Mm-hmm.
And also do your best in relating to people, and don't be so selfish and feel like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You get better response if you are not selfish.
Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much for being a guest. You. It's been so enjoyable, and thank you so much for your contribution, and we wish you well. If you found our podcasting interesting and would like to join us for a follow-up discussion, we will be meeting on Clubhouse Friday the 4th at 6 p.m. GMT. So why not sign up to Clubhouse, look for Eco Leadership Institute, and join us for a discussion about the podcast and about taking a stance in this war. This Clubhouse discussion will be recorded. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Edgy Ideas. If you enjoyed our podcast and would like more information about our coaching, training, and events, please contact simon@analyticnetwork.com or go to www.analyticnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.